welcome to episode 54 of Fly Away, a weekly podcast from Outlander Travel about the thing we love most, travel. Each week, we will talk about different adventures and vacation options out there, some local, some more exotic. Join us as we chat about our own travels and those of our clients. Hopefully, our talks will help you dream, plan, and get out there. My name is Elizabeth, and this week I'm joined by fellow Outlander travel agents Sandy and Robin. We are also joined tonight by a very special guest who also happens to be my sister. Yay! Everyone say hello to Linda.
Hey, Linda.
Hi, guys.
Linda currently lives in San Francisco, but has also lived in Hong Kong and has traveled extensively throughout Asia, both for business and for leisure. Tourism is growing exponentially all over Asia, but many Americans are still a bit intimidated by the customs, food, and even the place names in this beautiful area of the world. So this week, we asked Linda if she would share her experience and knowledge of China, Hong Kong, Japan, and Southeast Asia with us, in the hopes that we can boost your confidence about visiting any of these countries in the near future. So let's get started, and let's just go ahead and lay it out there. What are some of the most common errors that Americans make about Asia in general when traveling or even just when planning their travel?
Well, I think you just touched on one of them, which is you know, Asia in general. Asia is one of the most culturally diverse places on the face of the earth, and in many people's lingo, Australia, India, all of that encompasses Asia. So you're talking about lots of different cultures and personalities. So don't assume that they're all like each other, and don't assume that everything that makes sense in Japan is going to make sense in China. And certainly don't assume that everything that makes sense in Indonesia is going to make sense in Hong Kong. So you need to be sensitive to the fact that it is extremely culturally diverse, which makes it one of the most amazing places to visit. But it also means you can't take any of that for granted.
And, you know, this we're sort of lumping Asia in. This is not a trip that you take. You don't go to Asia.
But at the same time, it's always a big struggle when people try to decide, you know, should I try to hit several countries on a two-week trip, or should I just hit one or two? My advice is always never to sell any country short. You know, if you think you might have the opportunity to take more than one trip, which hopefully most people do because it's definitely worth it, you know, I would try to keep it to two, maybe three countries per trip. But I also think there's so much that you can explore just by spending 2 weeks in one country. It would not be hard to fill your time. So, but don't try to overdo it. Even though everything's kind of close together and it's tempting to say, oh, I want to just do all of Asia in one trip and put it together. Unless you're talking about a year's worth of travel that you're taking a sabbatical or something, yeah. Then I recommend narrowing it down and really immersing yourself in the culture.
Yeah, I had a friend this summer who was going to Hong Kong and wanted to see the Great Wall. And when we started looking at the map, we're like, oh, yeah, this is not just right there.
So, well, it's doable because I did that with Linda.
It's doable, but you do have to plan it carefully. I mean, if you think about China alone is the same land size as the U.S., but with 1.4 billion people. So, you know, and a lot of those people are in concentrated areas, and then you have vast areas that have no people in it. So getting around, you know, if you want to fly in, you know, from place to place in China, it's not that dissimilar from flying from, say, San Francisco to New York in the U.S. You know, it's a long distance. So it's something that you need to keep in mind.
Yeah, that's what we found, that it was like an eight-hour flight. You know, like,
but definitely worth seeing the Great Wall. We could do a whole podcast just on the Great Wall.
Well, let me ask you this about the Great Wall. Someone told me there was a Starbucks when he went. Have you seen that?
So the Great Wall has different areas called gates. So those are the different areas where you can go see the Great Wall. So you can't just, like, wander up to it and go take a look. Like, you have to go into one of the designated areas because it is... You know, it's historic. It's, you know, it needs to be preserved, and so they have to keep track of it. And the gates, there's one that's 30 minutes drive from Beijing. There's one that's an hour drive from Beijing. There's one that's an hour and a half drive from Beijing. There's one that's 2 hours from Beijing. And the closer you are to Beijing, the more touristy it's going to be. So yeah, there's Starbucks. There's a luge that you can take to come down off the wall. There's there's games. There's people selling all sorts of touristy things. So. And you'll see lots of people taking their wedding pictures on the wall. So you'll get the full tourist experience if you do the nearby gates. If you go to one of the further, you know, ones that are further away, you may need a guide to help you. But you'll see beautiful, unspoiled tracks of the wall.
There's also I always talk about races, but there's a Great Wall Marathon, too.
You've been on the Great Wall?
Yeah, yeah. And it's like... steps. I mean, it looks crazy.
Oh, there are steps on the Great Wall. Absolutely. I recall.
There is a race along the Great Wall, and it's, I know several people who've completed it, and it is a beautiful race.
So what are some of the other things that you always wish you could tell Americans that you see visiting any given country in Asia, if you've seen, a huge guffaw or, something that maybe if somebody had just told them before they came to the country,
I could have. So I think the first thing is understand that you should be sort of, if you're traveling in general, I think it's very, very important to be open-minded and patient, and you're there to absorb the culture. You're not there to impress your culture upon them. You're there to actually see how they live and understand how they live. So be curious and ask questions, but be polite and be patient, because they're trying to communicate with you in a language that isn't their native language. And so it's not always going to be perfect. And rather than assuming something from a misunderstanding, it's better to sort of just try to be as patient as possible and take it as part of the adventure of travel. But as part of that, politeness a little bit can go a long way. So even if you're probably not going to learn Mandarin before you go to China, but at the same time, you want to be able to say please, and you want to be able to say thank you, and show that kind of appreciation and say it in a polite tone. So before you travel anywhere in the world, but particularly in Asia, I definitely recommend making sure you learn a few words that represent politeness. Another mistake that I think a lot of people make is not really understanding that there are differences in sort of currencies and how money are handled in customs around that. So one thing that can really help, it's actually a business book, but I recommend it even to people who are traveling for fun. It's a book called Kiss, Bow, and Shake Hands. And it's a book that has a chapter on each country, including some cultural customs and some things that you should and should not do to be rude. So for example, in Japan, when you're exchanging business cards with someone, it's very important to do it very formally, and you bow to them rather than shaking their hand. So this book can help you understand like some of the common greetings and sometimes how you speak to people in a respectful manner, and that can go a long way. So that's a great book no matter where you're going. But there are other things too. Tipping is not very common in most places in Asia and can often confuse people if you're trying to tip, say, a taxi cab driver in Japan. But in other places, it's a bit more acceptable. And some people, like in Indonesia and in China, might be more willing to take a tip, but it's still not something they're accustomed to. So just understand that there's different sensitivities around money and things like that that should be respected.
Do you have an airline preference when you travel to Asia?
Oh, so many wonderful airlines in Asia. I have to say, really amazing service. So when I travel from the United States to Asia, I tend to take United Airlines because I'm a Star Alliance member, and they go to a lot of different places in Asia from San Francisco, because San Francisco is a hub. But Delta, United, and American all do have flights to Asia. My preference is if you're flying to a specific country, most countries in Asia have native airlines that are very excellent. So one of my favorites is Cathay Pacific that flies to Hong Kong. They're just incredible service. Singapore Airlines to Singapore, JAL to Japan. These are some of my just truly top-notch airlines. And, of course, Qantas going to Australia is a great airline as well. So each country tends to take a lot of pride in their airlines, and you can really have some great experiences because the food you'll have on the flight will also be local to that country, and it's usually really, really excellent. So it's a good recommendation.
Isn't that a great concept that Americans take, that a country takes pride in its airline and the airline takes pride?
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Such a concept. Such a concept.
So different.
So as far as getting around Asia, there are some countries that require visas and some don't. And obviously we can't talk about all of the specifics, but are there any that require visas that are difficult to get? And, I've talked before about Russia and how difficult it is to get a visa. Is there anywhere in Asia that's like that? Or is it generally someplace that you can plan just a few months ahead to go visit?
Well, again, it depends on your level of adventure. So China is probably the hardest simply because, you need to fill out a lot of forms. The forms are quite long, but actually you can get a China visa in about a day if you use the faster service. So the China visa itself is not hard to get, but the form itself is quite lengthy. And so different countries, India can be a little bit of a challenge just because the embassies and everything can be a little bit difficult to work with. That's another one that requires a bit of planning. But like Australia is an online visa process that's quite easy. The one that I would say is definitely the hardest, which if you're a very adventurous traveler, is Tibet. So Tibet is not always open to tourists, and usually to get a visa to travel into Tibet, you have to be as part of a tour coming from China. It's a very specific way to go about it. So it's a very lengthy consideration, and they may even currently be closed to visitors right now, so it may be impossible to get a visa, but when it is open to visitors, it is quite a challenge to get a visa into Tibet. The rest of Asia, to get a tourist visa is not terribly, terribly difficult. You just need to be prepared for some paperwork and planning in advance and make sure there is absolutely no difference between your name on the visa and your name on your passport to avoid any confusion.
And as your travel agents, we'd like to say, always just give us the name that's on your passport. Yeah. We don't care how you feel about that name.
just need a copy to know what it is. Yeah.
That's all we want to know. We don't judge you for it.
So I know somebody who did a race in Singapore, and her pictures were amazing. So they did that, and which I didn't realize this, but there's a Universal Studios in Singapore.
Yes, there is.
And they ran through it, and there was like SpongeBob and stuff she was not expecting to see. And then they did Bali. I can't remember all the countries she went, but she did kind of like a beachy tour after that and went to some different countries. That looked really cool. So I guess that would be your Southeast Asia
area? Yes, definitely. And I have to say, Singapore is one of my favorite places. It's a unique city, and it's one of the cleanest, most organized cities you'll ever see. The food is insanely good and cheap. I mean, it is so, so good. Singapore itself is an expensive country to live in, but but it is actually, the food-wise, you can find some really great deals on food, and it's one of the places where you can eat a lot of the street food, and it's quite safe and clean. And it's just absolutely delicious, especially if you like a lot of flavor and a lot of spices. You'll have to be a little adventurous because you're going to come across some interesting things, but they're all really tasty. Bali is sort of one of those things. You were mentioning beach vacation, and I have to say, so I've been to Bali many times, and including my husband and I went on our honeymoon, and while there are lots of beaches in Bali, my absolute favorite part of Bali is actually in the mountains. It's a town called Ubud that's in the middle of Bali, which has these gorgeous, just gorges, and it's beautiful, like lush rainforest type environment with a lot of arts and crafts. And it's the type of place where you can wake up in the morning and you can open up your back deck and you can see monkeys playing in the trees.
Oh, man.
So my recommendation when you go to Bali is, while the beaches can be nice, but not all, you know, some of them have a lot of commercial shipping routes, so you'll sometimes see shipping containers on your beach vacation, which isn't ideal. Really, really, I could not recommend more actually staying in the center of Bali and going to Ubud and really just experiencing that. It's just gorgeous.
So you mentioned adventurous street food. What's the most adventurous thing you've tried?
Oh.
this will really interest Robin because she is our adventurous eater.
She's a super taster.
And by that I mean she does not eat adventurously at all.
So there is a dessert in Singapore that includes the fat that comes from, that surrounds the fallopian tubes of frogs. And it is delicious.
Really?
It is.
How is this dessert? This sounds like appetizer soup. Yeah. Food.
It's a sweet soup, but it's really, really good. Oh. And I highly recommend it. But yeah, a lot of people are horrified at this thought. And no, I do not know the person who first discovered that this was delicious. I can't even imagine their habits. But yeah, Singapore does have some really unique things. But most people, what you're going to come across that's going to be different or something that you might not be used to is when you order fish, you get the whole fish. It has the head on it, right. It has the tail on it, it has everything on it. So Some people get a little upset when they see the whole fish, or when you order the chicken, you're often going to get the whole chicken, including the head and everything else.
Oh, Robin's already just blown away. She's not interested in this conversation.
Robin always orders the chicken.
there's a belief, and I think it's very true, that you enhance the flavor by cooking it with everything still intact. And you know, the fish cheek is a delicacy. The fish eye is a delicacy. You know, so the various aspects of this, they eat it all. One small tip when you're eating a whole fish, by the way, in most places in Asia, it is considered when you take the top fillet off and you have the bones, a lot of people will want to flip the fish over to get to the other side of the meat. And that's considered bad luck in a lot of cultures. Oh. So it's better to just, to sort of cut through and gently remove the bones from the top and then continue to eat the fish kind of going down into it. So that's just a little tip because luck is very important in Asia.
Yeah.
So do they always serve the fish like left side up or right side up? Is there
necessarily
it's just whatever side is presented to you is the lucky side. And you just
you start with that side and then you finish that side and then you lift up you can just usually pull the tail up and lift the bones off and then continue to eat rather than flipping the fish over on the plate.
That's, I was at Hong Kong Disneyland, and I got a duck foot in my, and somebody said, that's very lucky. It just weirded me out.
Wow.
So, and they said, did it taste good? I was like, I don't actually remember eating it. I think I was so weirded out.
Was
by,
I supposed
yes,
to eat
there was a, there was a foot in my
I have another Asia question. Tell me about the squatty potties.
Oh gosh.
So most of Asia, and not to generalize Asia, but most common is rather than what you would consider a traditional Western pedestal toilet, you'll have actually a toilet that is more of, it's like it's still porcelain, but it's actually set down into the ground and it has two like little grippers for your feet and you're supposed to just sort of stand and squat down on the toilet to go to the bathroom, either number one or number two. and this is, it's the most common way to go to the bathroom in Asia. However, most hotels and things like that will actually have a pedestal toilet as well. You tend to only find places that only have the toilet that's the hole in the ground. You know, if you're in very, very rural or very, very local places, sometimes in airports and stuff, you'll see the door will actually have a little icon on it. So you can see they'll have a little picture of a pedestal toilet if that's the stall. Like they'll have like two stalls that are pedestal toilets and the rest are more traditional Asian. But a lot of the airports and a lot of the hotels and most of the bigger restaurants and everything have pedestal toilets now because they know it makes the tourists happy.
Yeah. That said, when we were in Xi'an, they did not have the pedestal toilets. And I have the best sister in the world. I had to go so bad. And I was like, I can't do it. And she went all over the airport looking for a pedestal toilet. She came back, she was like, nope, there isn't one. It's the only time in my life that I actually waited till I got on the plane to the bathroom.
Well, you know, I think about it. And
said there's an opposite thing that you should also be aware of, which is in Japan. Japan has the best toilets in the world. So in Japan, they'll have some pedestal toilets, but they will be heated. They'll have all sorts of washing options, front, back, up, down. Oh, yeah. And some of them even play music. Some of them will open for you when you approach them and then close for the toilets in Japan are phenomenal.
I did actually just recently post about a toilet museum in Japan. They actually have a museum for toilets.
Wow. Yeah. Well, I know my aunt and uncle have this framed, it's not really art, it's their own pictures, but it's like a frame of like different pictures of toilets around Asia. And when I saw that, I was like, what the heck? And you know, and my aunt's like, oh no, they just stand there and they're just quiet. And now that like when I was coming back from California this summer, there was this woman sitting beside me on the plane and I don't know where she was from, but she was probably in her 60s or 70s, and she was in the middle seat, and she sat Indian style the whole way back. And so she was obviously really limber, and, you know, she was older, and so I'm sure she had no problem, but, like, someone like my mom could not do those squatty potties. There was, like, no way. And I've seen the pictures, too, of how they have, like, a picture of somebody actually standing on a pedestal toilet, and they have, like, the circle with the slash through it to tell them not to do it that way.
So it doesn't tend to end well for the toilet. You get a lot of broken seats that way. Yeah. But at the same time, like, that's what they're used to. And by the way, a lot of medical research has shown that that's a much more efficient way to position yourself when
I completely believe it, but my body does not want it. My brain just shuts down and says, nope, we're not doing it. Nope.
Yeah.
Nope. It's a whole lot of nope. It's a nope sandwich with some nope sauce. Nope. So that said, clearly I have some cultural work to do. But so now that we've convinced people that Asia is a wonderful place to visit, we have to narrow it down. So Linda, if you could give somebody some advice on, you know, I've never been to Asia, where should I start? And obviously this could be a different answer for different people, but.
Yeah. I mean, if you really want to see city, like if you really enjoy sort of cities and kind of something very vibrant and different, like nightlife and what have you, it's tough to beat Tokyo or Hong Kong. They're great, you know, they're huge cities and there's lots of different things that you can sort of experiment with and do. And those are great sort of first times if you really want to see cities, museums, all sorts of things, places to visit. If you're looking for a bit more of adventure or something that's kind of off the beaten path, I personally would recommend starting with either Vietnam or Thailand. They both have a nice balance of relaxation and sort of cultural things that you can see. Great food in both. I mean, some of the best food in the world is in Vietnam or in Thailand. And you can do a combination of some cultural sites and then go hang out on the beach for a little while. The beaches are gorgeous. They're very manageable countries to travel in. And there's lots of different tours and routes that you can take that'll make it easier. But you're going to see stuff that you've never seen before, and it's really going to be fascinating and interesting. So that's the ratio I would give you for a city person versus maybe a more adventurous traveler.
And you mentioned that the beaches in Bali were not necessarily your favorite beaches of all the beaches. What's the best beach in, you know, where do you go to the beach in Asia?
Mm-hmm. Ooh, so there are a lot of beautiful ones. So I've never been to Fiji, but I have heard that the beaches in Fiji are just absolutely breathtaking, and I think they are. The beaches in Thailand are gorgeous. They're really, really beautiful. Vietnam what is Da Nang, so, you know, what used to be sort of the center line of the Vietnam War, is now actually a really gorgeous beach area. They've done a lot of work in that area in cleaning everything up, and it's really quite beautiful as well. So, but I would probably say my favorite beaches that I visited would be in Thailand, but I'm dying to go to Fiji, so.
So those will soon be the favorites. Yeah. Did you guys have any other questions for Linda?
No, I asked about the squatty potty and the weird food. So
I will give you, going back to the airlines, I will give you one tip, and this might apply to more than one airline, but just because I was such a frequent flyer on Cathay Pacific, I strongly recommend, if you are going to be flying to Hong Kong, sign up for the Asia Miles program so you get miles from them. And if you happen to be taking a trip for your birthday, if you fly on your birthday, you'll get upgraded automatically.
Oh.
Because you're a member of Asia Miles. So, oh, and trust me, that is something that you would like to have on Cathay Pacific.
You kind of like to have it on any airline, really, but yeah.
There may be other airlines to do it, but I just know about Cathay Pacific and
You and someone who's with you or just you?
You know, that's a really good question. I think you'd have to do a little bit of convincing, but you might be able to make that happen.
And that was actually
you have to be a member of their miles program to get it.
Okay. And Cathay Pacific actually has a 48-hour check-in period, if I remember correctly, because we got a little bit messed up by that. We tried to check in a little bit later, and they had to completely rearrange the plane for us. So, it was bad. It was bad. And then I ended up in that middle seat next to the man who read for 17 whole hours. He did not turn off his light. He did not stop turning the pages in his book, even when he ate his noodles. He read the whole time. We do have an upcoming podcast on very long flights and how to cope with them. So we can talk about that then. Well, that is our show for this week. We welcome your comments and feedback on this episode or any episode. To leave comments, visit us at outlandertravel.com, then click podcast at the top of the page and find the episode you wish to comment on, or like us on Facebook at facebook.com/outlanderpodcast, or search for Fly Away, or email us at info@outlandertravel.com. We would love to hear from you, obviously. Thank you once again to Linda for sharing so much great information on travel in Asia. Thank you so much for spending time with us.
Yeah, thank you, Linda.
And on behalf of Sandy, Robin, and myself, Elizabeth, thank you for joining us here at Outlander Travel, and we'll see you next week. Gotta fly. Thank you.